This is the Nuance Podcast by Medicine Explained. We're your hosts, Amanda
and Dan.
We talk to experts on health, the human experience, and the intersection of climate and human health.
We explore the nuance that's been lost in today's conversation. We don't take ads because we want to keep our information unbiased.
But we do need your support. So leave a review on Apple or Spotify.
And share with your friends or on social media.
In today's conversation, we speak with Dr. Sasha Hamdani, who is a board-certified psychiatrist and ADHD specialist. In addition to her private practice, she has a robust social media following across multiple platforms, where she provides accessible and accurate information about ADHD. She authored the book Self-Care for People with ADHD, 100-plus Ways to Recharge, De-Stress, and Prioritize You, that came out in January 2023. Today, we talk about what ADHD is, what the main misconceptions about ADHD are, and how to treat and manage ADHD, including practical tips like mental self-care, emotional self-care, and physical self-care. This was a really interesting conversation, and we hope you enjoy it. Now, on to the podcast. Hi, Dr. Hamdani. It's wonderful to have you on the podcast. I really loved meeting you in person. We had such a great time in San Francisco. So I'm really, really excited to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. And you can call me Sasha. That's fine.
Okay, perfect. Sounds good. So I will record a bio in the editing process. So we already heard a little bit about you, but I love when people just introduce themselves as well, because there's little nuances that come up. So who are you? What do you do?
Yeah. So my name is Dr. Sasha Hamdani. I'm a board certified psychiatrist and I'm an ADHD clinical specialist. I did my medical school through University of Missouri, Kansas City. And then I completed my training at University of Arizona, and then my final year in University of Kansas. And now I practice in a private practice in Leawood, Kansas, and I see patients six and up for just general psychiatry. And I also do social media, like clinical advocacy about ADHD on the side.
On the side.
It's on like the side.
Two full-time positions.
Yes.
Plus you're a mother, so.
And I'm a mom. Three. That's a big three.
It is. So what inspired you to pursue psychiatry?
So it's a weird story. So my mom is a pediatrician and loves her job. Loves her job. So like we grew up and we saw how much what a good work-life balance she had. And so I knew from a young age, like, I want to do that too. So I entered medical school knowing that I wanted to do pediatrics and I wanted to just see that patient population. As I progressed through medical school, I started to struggle with my own ADHD and trying to figure out and navigate my way through that diagnosis, and still pretty hell-bent on pediatrics. And then my last clinical rotation, I decided for some inexplicable reason that I wanted to do peds ICU, which I'd be horrible at. I don't know why I thought that. I don't know. I can't explain myself. I have no idea. Now in retrospect, I'm like, that's insane. But so on my last day of the rotation, she was like, you cry all the time in the ICU. You cannot do this. You will burn out. You got to do something else. And literally the next day was the day I started child psychiatry. And as soon as I got into that, I like felt so at home. I didn't feel uneasy, like I was going to cry all the time. And so that kind of, I shifted gears for, and that was the very last rotation that I had of medical school. So I was like, okay, I'm switching gears right off the bat. So that's how I ended up here.
Thank you for sharing your story. That, I mean, peds ICU is very different than psychiatry for sure.
Oh my God. It's so insane that I walked in that day to get a letter from my attending to go into peds ICU. And she like, before, I was still standing at the door and she's like, I hope you're not asking for a letter. And I was like, oh, well, why shouldn't I? And that, you know, and I'm so glad that she felt like she felt that strongly to, because my whole life would have been so different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you're an ADHD specialist. What is ADHD?
Yes. So ADHD is a neurodevelopmental condition that is characterized by inattentiveness, hyperactivity, and impulsivity. And basically, it's become kind of part of this cultural discourse recently, and we talk about it a lot more. And people really grab hold of the idea that this is a focus issue. But as we learn more and expand on this more, we see how it permeates every other facet of being. And so it impacts your, you know, your relationships at home, your relationships at work. It has to deal with emotional regulation. It has to deal with sleep. So it's a complicated big umbrella diagnosis.
And I know that in the rhetoric too surrounding ADHD, there's a term thrown around called neurodiversity. Can you explain what that means?
So neurodivergence as a term came about in the 90s. And basically, it's like just a little bit of history on how that term came about. It kind of came about as a way of introducing a stigma-free way of looking at brains that thought differently. So in terms of autism and ADHD and and I wouldn't even call them mental health issues because, you know, they also covered other things, but when your brain worked a little bit differently, it would get thrown under this umbrella of neurodivergence or neurodiversity. And so that term has kind of stuck around and it's evolved over time. And now I think it's primarily just autism and ADHD, maybe some other things, organic brain syndrome and things like that. But yeah, that's where that came from.
And then there's a lot of talk, like you said, about ADHD, and you're on social media, so you see the good, the bad, the ugly. Yes. What are some of the misconceptions surrounding ADHD that you'd like to dispel?
Oh my God, how much time do you have, Amanda?
Top three.
Okay, there's so much, honestly. And that's part of the reason I got onto social media is because like in 2020, I started to do telehealth like every other provider. And because ADHD was starting to get talked about more, I mean, people would hold up their phone to the screen and be like, I have ADHD because of this video. And the video was so stupid. It was something like, if you sneeze numerous times in a row, you're neurodivergent, or that, I mean, that's literally what the video that got me started on this. Cause I was like, first I was like, wait, do I do that? And then the second thing was like, no, this is stupid. So there's a lot of, misconceptions out there, but just like overwhelmingly, I think some of the big ones that aren't just isolated to social media, but I think are just more of of misconceptions almost generationally. I think one of the big ones is that girls don't get ADHD, that it's hyper young boys. And I mean, if you were to put a clinical picture in what people previously thought, it's hyper young Caucasian boys. That's who is getting it. And so everybody else who fell out of that pretty narrow window would not get diagnosed. And now we're seeing it's almost this like, you know, entire generation of skipped women and minorities that are now getting diagnosed, and they're getting diagnosed because their kids are getting diagnosed. So I think that was a big misconception, not only for the general public, but also practitioners weren't really picking that up. Another misconception is that only kids have it. It's neurodevelopmental. And what happens is that as you age and as you grow, sometimes ADHD symptoms lessen, but more often than not, what's happening is you're just learning to mask and hide and cope with it better. So it's not truly that it goes away. And in high stress times, things can absolutely resurface just as bad as they were during childhood. But people will say, you know, you're an adult. There's no way that this is it. And then my least favorite, and the one that I hear all the time, is that everybody has ADHD. Everybody has a little bit of ADHD. And what I get where that's stemming from, and I think maybe how it should be rephrased, is that everybody can have difficulty focusing. That can be an intermittent phenomenon. But the thing that makes ADHD different is that this is a pervasive pattern. And ADHD is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. The disorder is really pivotal. People have started to shy away from that recently, and they've started to kind of reframe it as a superpower. It's not. It's a disorder. I mean, it's something that needs to be carry the same weight as depression or bipolar or something like that, because it impacts not only you, but your surrounding circle so significantly. So I think, you know, having this intermittent difficulty focusing that can be manageable by modifying a few factors, very different situation than something that's actively exploding your life internally.
Well, that's really interesting. And I'm so glad that we're talking about this topic and that you're talking about it on social media, because it is definitely nuanced, which is why, like, we started this podcast. Is there's so much rhetoric, but it's a lot of like short snippets, like, oh, I can't pay attention, so I have ADHD, or exactly what you're saying. Everyone has ADHD. Yeah. So thank you for breaking that down. So you did talk about some of the symptoms that you can have that could lead to the diagnosis of ADHD. Mm-hmm. And it isn't just like inability to focus or hyperactivity. So do you mind breaking down some of the symptoms that you look for in the diagnosis?
So in terms of, there are three different types of ADHD. I mean, that's where the DSM has landed currently. I have my beef with the DSM also, but like right now, as of right now, there's inattentive type ADHD, hyperactive type ADHD, and then combined presentation. So inattentive are the symptoms where difficulty initiating tasks, difficulty paying attention, difficulty completing a task, difficulty with routine tasks, being forgetful, like, did I brush my teeth this morning? Difficulty with, you know, what you think of as like the space cadet presentation, like disorganized and forgetful. Hyperactivity is both the physical and verbal impulsivity. So fidgeting, getting out of your seat, difficulty keeping your hands to yourself, verbal impulsivity, blurting out answers or questions, interrupting other people, difficulty waiting your turn in conversation, hyper-talkative. These are all kind of things we look out for, this hyperactive. And then combined type is a combination of both.
Thanks for laying that out. So actually something that I have a question about, because I see a lot of folks come into the clinic that are wanting evaluation for a diagnosis of ADHD. Yeah. And I don't know, because you wrote a book called Self-Care for People with ADHD, 100 Plus Ways to Recharge, De-Stress, and Prioritize You. And it's full of really great information. But when do you start people on medication versus just like what you recommend in your book, which is more like lifestyle-based factors?
I think that that's such a personal decision between the patient/patient's family and the physician, right? Because it's really an evaluation of everything. It's an evaluation of how old they are. It's an evaluation of where they are in terms of symptomology, where they are in terms of life. Like, are you in active schooling? Are you out of schooling? Do you have flexibility in your schedule? Do you not? It depends on how it's impacting the family. It depends on like your genetic load, like what you can metabolize, what you can't. So there's a lot of different factors that go into when do we think about a medication and what medication do we start? I'm always of the vein that the right treatment is never going to be just medication, though. It should always be a combination of behavioral stuff and medication. So I don't think there's a time span in terms of behavioral modification. I think that as soon as you have a suspicion, even if you don't have ADHD, those tips and tools aren't going to hurt you. Like, you should work on trying to optimize your brain. That's going to help and benefit you. And it's going to also make you more confident about what skill sets you have. So I think that should be a process that starts right from when you have suspicions. And then once you get evaluated, then you kind of decide with your doctor, hey, can I work further on these behavioral modifications, maybe utilize the help of a therapist or something to get me to a higher level of functioning? Or do you think I need medication for this?
Mm. Yeah, I really like that answer. Thank you. Also, is there something called ADD now, or is it all lumped into ADHD?
That's such a good question. I get it all the time. So ADD is actually an outdated term. The thing that it's closest to right now is ADHD inattentive type. This is why I was saying I have beef with the DSM. It's so confusing. It's so confusing, and it's just not very, like, it's not, I mean, this is a tangent, but this is probably on brand for an ADHD interview. The reason I have some issues with the DSM is I feel like their scope is too limited, and it's kind of a narrow, it's just a confusing definition of all of these things. So like, it's already targeted towards this pretty narrow spectrum of people, and it doesn't encompass the emotional component of it or physical components or anything like that. But then also like it's not encapsulating a huge group of people. So right now I get the question all the time, like, is ADHD underdiagnosed or overdiagnosed, or what are we doing here? And it's so underdiagnosed in certain like socioeconomic populations, certain racial populations, because the DSM, it just is tailored to look for one specific thing.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. That's like how research, like who you research, is biases, like what diagnosis you make. Yeah. So if you were to change a DSM-5 diagnosis, like how would you expand it?
Yeah. I would put in a lot more scope in the emotional context of it. So I think a lot of times with ADHD, like a lot of women got misdiagnosed because they got put into an anxious category, or they got put into a mood disorder category, or they, you know, some sort of emotional underpinning, when really it was your ADHD symptoms were so significant that it was kind of bleeding into that. So I would encapsulate and put like timelines and conditional terms, like, yes, you have depressive symptoms, but is it related to being overwhelmed? Is it related to this? Is it, you know, so it's not two separate diagnoses. I would also put in stuff about rejection sensitive dysphoria, which is something that, you know, almost 100% of people with ADHD experience, but it's nowhere in the DSM. And it's this intense emotional, but sometimes physical pain when there is real or perceived rejection or criticism. And that as a concept, I think, is so groundbreaking, because number one, it's uncomfortable and it's terrible to go through. But number two, I mean, you have this additional layer of difficulty accessing things because you're afraid of rejection, afraid of criticism, and that holds you back from doing a lot of the things that you may do to kind of help your ADHD. So I think that's important to talk about, and I wish it was in there.
Mm, interesting. So have you like diagnosed folks or like treated people for ADHD who don't come in with like the classical DSM-5 presenting symptoms for ADHD?
You know, the problem is you're only as good as the tools you're given, right? So in order to make a good diagnosis, in order to meet criteria for insurance, in order to do that, they need to have met the criteria. Now, there are people that I have diagnosed with ADHD that have, in addition to what they're experiencing, have this expanded view of it, and they have additional symptoms. But I don't think I've diagnosed people with ADHD who don't meet those criteria. Now, there are people that have had suspicions like, hey, this could be it. And we educate them and we, you know, you give them the resources. And it might be something as simple as like, I want you to continue your education about ADHD and keep an eye out for things, because maybe there's a disconnect between you and I, and you're not relating the information to me in a way that I'm hearing it appropriately. So it's not going to hurt you to work on these skill sets and things like that. So like, continue your journey on your own, and then we can re-explore it if you feel like that there's something worth re-exploring.
Interesting. Yeah, I've had a couple of friends who like identify as women, and they have had symptoms of anxiety their whole lives, and they were never managed well. And then they started a treatment for ADHD, and their symptoms were much better controlled. So yeah, that's very, very interesting. And thank you so much for talking about it in like the public sphere and stuff, because it definitely is life changing.
Yeah, I would agree.
And so back to your book, you have 6 different sections: emotional self-care, physical self-care, mental self-care, social self-care, and professional self-care, and practical self-care.
Yes.
So I would love if you could give an example just for each of them. I don't want you to obviously give away your full book, because people need to get that. Okay. just an example for each.
So I think that the thing that, prior to getting into that, the book itself, I feel like self-care is really, I I didn't know what else to call it, because it is how to take care of yourself. But I think there's a misconception about self-care, right? Because you think that it's like this luxurious, self-indulgent experience that you have to treat yourself, when really this is the reframing that I had and that I've come to in terms of the course of my own clinical diagnosis and treating others, is that self-care is more about self-preservation. Like, what do you do to keep yourself whole, to keep yourself healthy and functioning? And so in that regard, a lot of the book is like explaining how your brain works, explaining why stuff you might already do is actually good for you, so you maintain those habits. So in terms of like emotional self-care, things like the concept of rejection sensitive dysphoria, like, what is that? How would you explain that to your peers and to your loved ones so that they understand and improve communication? That's one of the things in emotional self-care. And honestly, what the biggest part of that, and by the way, when I'm saying chapter, I'm talking like two paragraphs, because each of these chapters is like a second long. But the thing that I talk about in those chapters is like how you recognize it yourself. Because a lot of times when you're feeling this experience, you feel very isolated in the moment. Like, I'm the only person in the world who's ever gone through this. And it's horrible. And I don't want to talk about it. And I don't want to think about it. But it's how to face it and look at it and recognize what's happening. So that, and maybe it's not necessarily going to get better in that moment, but being able to look at it objectively and be like, okay, I know where this is coming from. And so now I can move forward with this instead of carrying that heaviness with me all day. In terms of physical self-care, things like how to approach hydration. I mean, this is such a silly thing, and everybody is, you know, everybody's walking around with their Stanley tumblers. But like, before that, I mean, there would be times where I would like go, I'd be Monday morning, I'm like, did I have a sip of water this weekend? Probably not. Like, I've had coffee and Diet Dr. Pepper all weekend. Cool. And so things like that, like managing and figuring out like, what are those base nutritional and hydration needs that it's going to keep my brain healthy so that I can function on a higher level? Social things, how to talk to your circle, how do you explain things? Professional, there's a chapter on there that I really like, and this is one of the longer ones, so it's kind of hard to get into, but it's how do you know when it's the right time to ask for accommodations in school or in work? And then how do you ask for those? So a lot of times people are like, I don't want to disclose my diagnosis. And then, you know, we talk about like, okay, you don't have to. If you don't feel comfortable bringing your diagnosis to HR or to something else, but you want a reasonable accommodation, like, I want to come in a little bit earlier so I'm less distracted, I want to stay a little bit late, you know, things like that. How you can ask for that in a way that flips it into a positive view rather than, you know, starting from a deficit. What are the other categories?
Emotional, physical, mental, social, professional, okay. Practical.
Mental things are things for yourself. Like, and in that entirety of the chapter is how to explain things to yourself. And so those are things like, what is ADHD? How do you explain ADHD to yourself? Things like that. And then practical are truly some of the, I feel like, the things that took me the longest to learn. And those are things like, how do I take care of my house? How do I take care of a budget? How do I take care of groceries? Like, how do I do these functional things? So they're like, when the book is talking about tips and tricks, you don't really think about planning ahead or meal prepping or something like that as a self-care thing, but getting into a frame of mind where you can, whatever you have the spoons for, planning ahead, what a tremendous difference it makes to the stress level going forward, or even planning ahead enough to have a backup stash of something. I mean, it just reduces so much stress and anxiety in the long run. So you're not always running on a deficit.
Thank you for running through those. And then there's so many like great practical tips in there. So I really recommend it to anyone who's interested. And something that I want to touch upon is that there's a huge stigma around mental health in general. And like we talked about earlier, ADHD too. And I respect you regardless, but I also very much respect that you talk about your own like ADHD and how you manage the symptoms. And so thank you for doing that. It's very much needed for people to be vulnerable and for everyone to see that it's not just them struggling with these diagnoses. So if you don't mind, do you mind sharing your experience and how you kind of manage those symptoms, like some of the like everyday things that you do, like drinking a glass of water in the morning?
Yes. So I was originally diagnosed in fourth grade. Because I was really rambunctious. I like started a riot in my classroom. So I was super rambunctious. I presented like a boy. So I think that's why I was picked up. My mom, again, was a pediatrician. So I was able to get into the system and was started on medication right at that spot. But because there was so much stigma around it, I didn't know really. I mean, my parents were like, this is a vitamin that's going to help you focus and it's going to help you with school. Like that's the extent. But I didn't know about ADHD. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know it was a prescription medication. Anyway, things were pretty smooth sailing. And then I got into medical school right out of high school. So I moved away for the first time. I was by myself and obviously didn't take my vitamin. Everything exploded. And so then it became a court, like me trying to figure out, like, how do I treat this? What is this? And it was like me rebelling against the diagnosis. So now that we've come out on the other side of this after finishing medical school, getting into a psychiatry residency where I was truly like glued back together. My attendings truly, truly like taught me all of these life building skills where I felt like I didn't have time to build and expand on in a safe capacity. They were able to take me through that. And a combination of that and medication got me up until the point of till I finish boards. And then after finishing boards, I had to figure out like, do I, you know, I was starting a family at that time. So I was like, I think now might be a good time to try being off medications. And so now I've just been kind of surviving on those behavioral modifications and things like that are, you know, I had to learn about exercise and I hate exercise, objectively hate it. I'm bad at it. I've never been good at it. But like once I reframe that exercise is not just like something that I need to be summer ready. but like this is something that as soon as I exercise, my brain is going to function better. I'm going to sleep better. I'm going to do all of these other things better. That helped change my relationship with exercise. And now it's like, okay, I need this as to keep my brain going because I actually make time for it. Whereas if it's like, I'm going to look better in a bathing suit, I'll be like, not this year. things like I make sure that I have to hydrate every morning because at least if I make sure I get that in, if I go the rest of the day, at least I have something in the tank. Things like changing my diet. And again, I don't have a super balanced diet by any means, but I also know what are the things that my body hates. So I know my body hates gluten. I immediately get foggy. I mean, and I don't think that's an ADHD thing. I think that specifically my family doesn't do great with gluten. And I do have a sensitivity to it, not a true celiac picture, but I do have an intolerance. And so figuring out what my body likes, what my body doesn't like, and then modifying based on that.
Thank you so much for sharing. I am actually gluten sensitive as well. And I get brain fog like immediately.
Immediately.
But, yeah.
I realized it was a problem because I was driving. I drove home, put the car in the garage. I forgot to put down the garage. I left the car running and then I left the door to the garage, like the door going into the house open. And my husband walked in and was like, what? None of these normal steps were done. I just had two croissants. I'm out of here.
Oh my gosh. It's like subconscious. Like you just forgot everything. That's wild. My God.
It's like, I forgot what I was supposed to do. And I just was like, I knew that I wanted to go to sleep. And so that's like, my body was just like taking me there and I just didn't do any of the other stuff.
Wow. So we also talked a little bit about how you're sometimes asked, is ADHD like under or overdiagnosed? It seems like a lot more people are having the ADHD diagnosis. I don't know if that's true or not, but why do you think that there's more an increase in ADHD?
I don't think there's an increase in ADHD. I think we're diagnosing it more because we're talking about it more. But I think the people that are getting diagnosed have always been ADHD. They're just being found more. So I think the population numbers haven't changed. I don't think there's more of it. I think it's just we're pulling from a previously obscured diagnostic population. Like these people weren't getting diagnosed and now they are.
Mm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then lastly, we ask all of our guests to finish the following sentence. The future is blank.
The future is learning from failure. I think that that's one of the hardest things about ADHD. And I mean, I don't know, like maybe just being a human is learning from your own behavioral patterns. And I think that a lot of people, they fail and then they never pick up things again. But I think there's a lot of learning to happen around failures and using that as like steps to move forward and like future endeavors. I think that's really important.
Mm. I love that. That's a really good answer. And you talked about people, you know, learning more about what ADHD is. And so where can we find more information from you? What are your handles? All of that good stuff.
Yeah. So I'm on pretty much all social media. I'm on Instagram. I'm on TikTok. I'm on YouTube, The Psych Doctor MD. Or you can type in my name and you'll find me. The book came out through Simon Schuster, Self-Care for People with ADHD. That came out in January. That's out now and you can get that anywhere. And then my app, Focus Genie, which is like a behavioral management platform. It does educational modules. It's incentivized and gamified. So it's interesting. It's a productivity tool. That will be out, we're hoping, in August. We're doing final touches on performance testing, but it should be out.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It's always good connecting. And thank you for spending time with me today.
Of course. Good luck at clinic.
Thank you.